Don't move a muscle. The podcast is starting.
Hello, and welcome to Podtrificus Totalis, a Harry Potter read-along podcast. This week, we are covering Chapter 2 in Prisoner of Azkaban, Aunt Marge's Big Mistake. I'm your host, Cassie.
And I'm Joe.
And we have a special guest today. Hooray. We promised more guests and we're making good on that promise. So I would like to introduce Angel of the Mysteries and Urban Legends podcast.
Hey, everyone.
Yeah. Hey. So, Angel, thank you so much for being with us. Thank you for sitting down with us to talk about Harry Potter. We usually start out our guests episodes by getting to know our guests a little bit. For our listeners, I will put a timestamp in the description if you want to skip all over this and get right to the chapter discussion. But we'll do it. So, Angel, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your podcast.
So I don't even know where to begin. So obviously I'm Angel and I'm 20 years old. I am a receptionist on the, well, as my main job. And my podcast is, I'm sure you've guessed, Mysteries and Urban Legends. I recently became a podcaster like not too long ago, so I'm still fairly new to this, but this is such an exciting opportunity. And when I got like the offer, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm networking. This is so big.
It feels like that for us too. So, you know, you're our 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th guest. I was not counting my sister.
We've had some big shots.
Yeah. So like, don't feel like we're pros at this either. But yeah, I love that opportunity to like chat with other podcasters, like not even as like a, ooh, they'll plug my show, but just like, oh, I get to talk to new people.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly how I feel. Like, it's just like, I love getting to know different people, especially if they're like different than what my podcast is kind of about. I love Harry Potter, so just having this opportunity was like perfect for me.
Yeah, especially right now too, I think, because we're still doing the whole social distancing and not going outside thing. Right. At least we are. Other people in the world don't seem to be, but it's, you don't really get to meet people anymore, or you don't really get to talk to people.
Yeah.
So I think podcasting is a nice way kind of around that to get to know new people in a safe way.
Yeah, I agree.
So kind of on that note, if you're saying you love Harry Potter, tell us about your history with the Harry Potter series, like how you got into it, when you first read it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So honestly, I first came to the U.S. back in 2004. I'm from Thailand originally.
Oh, wow.
And I remember seeing my mom always reading like Harry Potter. She was like, she was always reading it, but it was like translated for Thai readers. So being older now and like reflecting on that, I'm like, that's so awesome. That's really cool. And my mom's not really too big of a reader. So I was, as a child, I just always saw her reading this book, and I kind of knew what it was, but I didn't fully understand. And I think my mom had taken me to go see, I think it might have been either Chamber of Secrets or Prisoner of Azkaban, one of the two. And I was like so stoked. Like seeing it was, I remember in the parking lot of the movie theater, I was like pretending to be Harry Potter. And I just thought I was so cool. But I was just like a kid just kind of messing around.
It would have had to have been Prisoner of Azkaban. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you. It would have had to have been Prisoner of Azkaban if it was 2004, because I think Chamber of Secrets came out in like 02, 03, although some movie theaters keep movies forever. But go on. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like my first kind of exposure to Harry Potter. And then I started reading it, I think, in maybe third or fourth grade, because I was like, oh, yeah, Harry Potter's a thing. I should probably read that. And I was big on books at the time. And I just kind of fell in love with it. And I remember my sister, or my stepsister, she was super into Harry Potter, too. And we had actually wanted to paint my bedroom in the style of the Gryffindor girls dormitory.
Uh-huh.
And I remember that was like a thing for a second. And then it just never really took off, but she took me to see, I believe, the very last Harry Potter movie, and it was great. It was awesome.
That's interesting that you got into the books, like you'd seen movies first and then got into the books. Because I also saw the first movie in 2001. I was like 6 or 7 years old and fell in love with it and then started reading the books. So let me ask, when you started reading the books, did you start like from book one and read through?
Yes. So actually, funny thing that you asked was that I actually didn't really like book one at first because I was young and I started reading it. And I remember the first chapter really boring me. And I feel bad admitting that, but I was also a kid, so I had a very short attention span. And I remember reading it. I was like, Privet Drive, what is this?
Because you're like, let's get to the magic. Let's get to the wands.
Yeah. I thought there was supposed to be magic and wands and crazy stuff, but all I'm getting is a cat and Privet Drive. What's going on here?
You're just an old man with his drills. Nothing interesting.
Right. Yeah.
You also mentioned your stepsister and your mom. Was that ever like a connection point, like reading together or going to the movies together?
Not reading together, but definitely the movies part. My mom had taken me to see the sixth movie when it came out. And I was older then, of course. And it was just it was a nice bonding moment for me because growing up, my mom and I never really got along that well. So her taking me to see that was a huge bonding moment. And my sister and I, when we went, I actually had a sleepover at her house the night of the premiere. And she did like makeup on me. Like we got like the Harry Potter glasses and she did like a scar on my forehead. And it was awesome. But I didn't have a Harry Potter shirt at the time. So I just wore a Twilight Eclipse shirt and said it was just it was Cedric Diggory.
Hey, that works.
Just sub in one YA series for the other.
Same actor.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, that's interesting too, because a lot of the guests, including ourselves, like it was for a lot of people, it's like, oh, my parents got me into the books, or like my parents read me the books aloud as I was a kid. So yeah, it kind of has that special thing of like bringing people together. I think any book has that power, but Harry Potter is so popular that it happens a lot. Yeah, so that's cool. So if you had to pick one, or maybe two, if you want to push it, what is your favorite book, do you think, in the Harry Potter series?
Oh, hands down, the fourth book.
Hmm, interesting.
Like, I don't know why, but I just feel that the fourth movie itself is like my favorite as well, because it was just, there was so much going on. But as much as I like the fourth movie, I really felt it did not capture the essence of the fourth book as well as it could have. Like if they made it like a two-part series, like, or a two-part movie, kind of like Deathly Hallows, then I really think they could have put more in there.
Absolutely. I completely agree.
Especially with like all the commentary going on as well.
They wanted to originally to split that fourth movie into two parts. I don't remember why exactly it didn't work out that they didn't. But the fourth book has so much in it.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I felt like the coolest kid in fourth grade carrying that thing around because I'm like, yeah, I'm reading this big book. It's 800 pages long. So historically, the fourth has been one of my favorites, too, because I feel like it's just like that quintessential like Harry Potter. Like it's before you've kind of got wrapped up into the big plot, but there's still the threads of
it.
And it's just like, it's a good midpoint of just like, we're comfortable in this world and we know these characters, but also we're bringing in all these new things. It's just like an exciting book. Mm-hmm.
It's like the beginning of the ramp up of the looming villain ahead, like, you know, and I really felt that I'm not trying to spoil
it. It's hard to talk about this without it. Yeah.
Thing, right. The whole main events in the fourth book are just so separate from the big issue. And I feel like the fourth book was like the last, you know how over the course of the series, it just gets darker and darker, even when it comes to the cinematography.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like the fourth book is the last, like, bright book, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, the childhood, like, innocence and the the adolescence.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. It's before you get into that, the like angst of the fifth book with Harry. Yeah. And then like the sixth book, it's all about like dating and relationships, or not all about that, but it's a big part of it. And the seventh book too, yeah, to an extent, that one's more about like, oh, we have to wrap up this story now. But yeah, the fourth one, I think, is the one where they still feel like kids in a way.
But even comparing it to...
That's exactly...
Even comparing it to the Prisoner of Azkaban book, I feel like... the Prisoner of Azkaban movie, I feel like that one's so much darker. And then the fourth movie is so bright again. Like, it's just so much more colorful.
It does have a pretty muted palette. That was the first David Yates one, I think. And he hates color. Mm. He goes intense with the no colors anymore thing as the movies go on. But the fourth one is kind of muted. But it's still...
yeah. It's I feel like it's brighter than this one. I just... it's been a little bit since I've watched it, but I've pretty much only remember it as like blue and gray.
This one has a lot of green in it. Like if I had to give this book and movie a color, it'd be green. We're talking about Prisoner of Azkaban.
Me too.
Yeah.
Goblet of Fire too, though. Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
For me, it's green and gold for some reason.
Yes.
Yeah. Probably part of that is that the cover is green and gold. But
you are probably right.
Prisoner of Azkaban as a movie is very green. They play with the color scheme. We try so hard to like not dig into the movies because we keep being like, we're going to do like a movie podcast, like a bonus episode where we talk about the movies. And then we just end up talking about the movies in the podcast. But yeah. Okay. So Goblet of Fire is a good one. I'm glad you said that too, because like, I think all of our previous guests have said that Deathly Hallows is their favorite, except maybe Becca. I don't remember what Becca said, which is not good because she's my sister. But yeah, so I'm glad to see somebody hyping up Goblet of Fire. I got tired of everybody saying like, I love Deathly Hallows. I'm like, you love camping?
Camping's fun for you? Not me.
Camping for 700 pages? Yeah, but that's another conversation for another time. So how about in general, if you read things other than Harry Potter, do you have a favorite book outside of the series?
Yeah, so... It's actually great that you asked me this, because usually I don't really think about this type of... I don't really think about it because I haven't read much too much lately. But honestly, I really, really, really like the two-part series of The Astonishing Adventures of Fanboy and Goth Girl.
I read the first one when I was like 12, and I only remembered that just now because you said the title of the book.
Yeah, I have both of the books. I remember reading the first one when I was like in high school, like as if that was like super long ago. That was like two, three years ago. But I read it and I was like, holy cow, like that's so cool. And I really liked the Goth Girl's character because I just thought she was really cool. And I liked getting into the psyche of the fanboy because he's a very flawed character, and both of them are both very flawed. And I just love like the gothic references because I'm a little bit of an edgy girl myself, but I really love it. And I ended up finding out that there was a sequel not too long after, and it's called Goth Girl Rising, and I checked it out. Well, I didn't check it out. I bought it from Thrift Books. I'm the plug. But I read it and I was like, holy cow, this is so good. Because in the second one, it's actually from the Goth Girl's perspective. And I don't know. I really like that series. I also like Junji Ito's work.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I know of because Joe was like, you know that creepy comic where the people go into the holes in the mountain? I'm like, no.
Oh my gosh, I love that one.
Oh, I've read the whole thing. It really horrifies me in a lot of ways. I mean, it's supposed to, but yeah, I think about it sometimes randomly and just cringe.
I love his work so much because it's just, his art is very beautiful in a macabre way, but like, but if you see him or see videos with him in it, like the actual author, Junji Ito, he's just a very wholesome little man.
Like, I just want to give him a hug. Dark things to put in the world.
Right. He's so twisted, but like, he's like a very wholesome little like smiley man. And I'm just like, oh, I just want to give you a big hug.
It's been probably 15 years since I read the Fanboy and Goth Girl book. I 100% picked it up as an 11-year-old, like, Goth Girl, ooh, sounds cool. I could be a Goth Girl. I'm going to read this book. And I like to hear that the second one switches the perspective to Goth Girl, because I feel like, and again, it's been a long time since I read the book, so I could be wrong. I feel like there's a trap with a lot of those YA books of like turning into like a manic pixie dream girl trope.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah. So like subverting that by going to the female character's perspective in another book, I think is a good idea. So maybe I'll check that out. I just finished grad school yesterday. So I'm really excited. Thank you. I'm really excited to like have time to read books again. So I will put that one on my list. I don't know about Junji Ito because I'm a little baby when it comes to horror, but but I like his style. Like, I like his art.
Yeah, he actually has a really awesome little book called, I don't remember, it has to do with his cats, called Yan and Moo. And I think that's a good little starter one because he makes it like, he makes them kind of creepy and like a little bit scary, but it includes pictures, actual like pictures of them and like what he's talking about when he refers to like a certain characteristic about them, and I don't know. I just like that one a lot.
Oh, you're gonna make Joe sad. We wanted to get a cat. We got like real, real amped up for getting a cat, and then we asked our landlord. He's like, no.
Yeah, it was pretty heartbreaking.
Yeah, so that's a little devastating.
I am definitely going to look into this cat book, though. Yeah. Yan and Moo, I just looked it up.
Hopefully he doesn't do anything
you're gonna love it.
Horrifying to his cats in the comic.
No, he doesn't do anything horrifying. He just kind of, like,
makes the cats horrifying.
Yes, he makes the cats horrifying because his girlfriend or his fiance or something moves in with the cats, and he doesn't like cats. So he makes it, like, very scary.
Okay.
Not very scary, but very creepy. Of him being a new cat dad and my boyfriend being a cat dad himself, he loved it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll let Joe screen it for me first and see if it like, and let him do the, is this going to give me nightmares? Yeah. Okay. So if you had to pick a favorite character in the Harry Potter series, who would it be?
Ooh, that's hard.
It is hard. And if it's somebody that hasn't
really difficult,
hasn't appeared yet as of chapter two of Prisoner of Azkaban, that's okay. We just can't get too far into it. But you can also abstain from answering, I guess, too, if it's too hard.
I think if I had to choose somebody, it would have to be Nymphadora Tonks.
Ooh,
I just think
yeah.
She's really cool.
I love Tonks. They did Tonks dirty in those movies.
I mean, she was barely in them is the biggest
That's
problem.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
I love Tonks,
though.
I was
so upset.
Yeah. Like 10-year-old me
She's
reading
so
that book
cool.
was like, that's everything I want to be. I want to be like,
exactly.
I want to be able to change my appearance at will. First of all, that seems great. And she's just like, she's so like spunky and cool, but also like a really human character.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. And then but in the movies, they're just kind of like, ooh, feet.
Pig nose.
Check out this character. Isn't she cool? And then never show her, like, give her more than, like, 20 minutes of screen time. I was like, what the heck?
I'm sure it doesn't even hit 20 minutes of screen time. I would be shocked if it was 2 minutes of screen time.
Oh, yeah.
I think she's one of the few, like, people of color, too, the actress that have been cast in those movies, which makes it even worse that she's barely in them.
Yeah, I feel like I would also say, like, she's not my favorite character, but I really think J.K. Rowling, not just in the movies, but also in the books, I feel like her character should have been expanded more. Cho Chang. Like, a lot of people hate Cho Chang because I'm in a Ravenclaw group and they were saying, someone had posted, like, why is Cho Chang the most worthless character in the series? And I'm like,
oh my God.
No. No. First of all, like, I went into like a full rant about this. I was like, first of all, Cho Chang is not a worthless character. She was written in a very shallow really shallow way. It was just written that she just wouldn't stop crying. But like, given the circumstances without spoilers, of course she would not stop crying.
She had a good reason to be crying.
Some major trauma there.
Very good reason. Yeah. And like, if you like, I really believe that there should have been a chapter about Cho learning to cope with what had happened and get herself back into, like, kind of move past it and dealing with what happened. And I really, like, I said that if, you know, they expanded on her character more, then she would have been really, really good. And as an Asian American at the time, I noticed that there wasn't much Asian representation in the media. Mm-hmm. And as a little girl, it meant a lot to me that they included an Asian character.
Totally. Yeah.
And also, like, it was clear she was reaching out to Harry for support and Harry just could not tell.
And honestly,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
Couldn't even read the, like, trauma of what she'd been. Oh, it's so hard to talk about. We'll get to you when we get to...
Yeah, please come back and we can really dig into...
We'll talk about Cho Chang. But yeah, I think that a lot of people need to better understand that boundary between, like, this character is a bad character and this character is badly mm-hmm. written. Because there's a big difference.
I completely agree.
There. And I think Cho Chang is poorly written. Or maybe not poorly written, but underwritten as a character.
Mm-hmm. And especially with her psyche, it was just kind of the way she was written in was just kind of like, whatever, this happened.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, Harry's too busy, like, wanting to, like, having other intentions rather than focusing on her as a person yeah. and having, like, her best interests and mental health at heart.
Yeah.
And I really don't like that.
And she was written as, like, an emotional, crying teenage girl, as, like, a stereotype,
like,
of it almost.
You be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Especially given that you have zero support system at all. Like, of course you'd be a mess.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, Cho Chang will be introduced in this book. So we're almost
Yay!
On topic. So my last question for you is, what is your Patronus? Because that's a new question that we're posing to our guests for Prisoner of Azkaban and that we will probably mm-hmm. continue through the rest of the books. But a Patronus is a thing that will be introduced in later chapters. So we're asking our guests, what would your Patronus be?
Okay. Canonically. I'm just going to say this is canonically from the Pottermore website. So it's, like, official, even if I don't really like it. It's a cobra, but I, like, don't like snakes.
Oh.
So I don't really identify with that. I did, like, the whole, like, test and everything. They're like, your Patronus is a cobra. And I'm like, wow, thanks. I don't like snakes at all, but cool. But if I had to choose one, I feel like mine would be, like, a tiger, maybe, or, like, a cat, because I love cats, clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those would be cool. I'm trying to remember. I think when I took that Pottermore thing, I got a dolphin, and I was just like... Sure.
I feel like the biggest thing to consider is that, like, they're all so specific to each character and is clearly based on their interests.
Yeah.
So a random quiz, even if it's the official quiz, isn't really going to give you what you want.
Are you saying that I can't learn about myself by taking online quizzes? Because you've just undermined like ages like 10 to 13. I was on that Quizilla.
I was on Quizopolis.
I think Quizopolis took over after Quizilla, the Quizilla empire imploded.
Yeah.
And by that point I had moved on. Oh man, Quizilla though.
Throwback to computer class when most of what I did was just go on Quizopolis.
Yep. Yeah.
And learn about myself, what type of sandwich I'd be, what holiday I am. Gosh, those were quite sometimes.
I needed to know my inner eye color. Like, that was important knowledge to my 12-year-old self.
I wanted to know if I was a vampire or a werewolf. Like,
and surely the most...
Obviously, I have to know.
Yeah, the most reliable source for that is a quiz that you took on a computer by picking options probably designed by another 12-year-old. Oh, man.
I'm going to cry. I'm, like, laughing so hard.
So,
I've never felt more seen in my life.
And I think that that's something, too, that's important with the Harry Potter series in that it captured a time on the internet that I'm very nostalgic for, where there were online quizzes mm-hmm. and, like, fan fiction and fan forums. And that stuff still exists, but not in the same way as back when
I
was a kid.
It's
cringy now. It is considered cringy, but I'm like, I want to see that fan art. I want to see somebody's imagining of like what this character looks like in 20 years as an adult and their AU where like Draco isn't a war criminal and hooks up with Hermione. I'm like, yeah, give me that.
Oh, Hermione was my ship, man. I loved Hermione together. I was like, they would be such a good couple if Draco wasn't the way he is.
If everything was different, they would get along great.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think my favorite one that I've read, my favorite, I guess, AU is like in 20 years where, or I don't think you'd be 20 years like now, but the one where Dudley Dursley's daughter ends up being a witch and he takes her over to Harry's house, like with Ginny. And like, there's like a bunch of, I saw it on, I didn't see it on Tumblr, but it was like a Tumblr post. But he takes her over to Harry's house and learns more about the wizarding world. And then, of course, the author had to put a wrench in the very end and include that her sister didn't get a letter. And I was like, ah, no.
I am familiar with the Tumblr post you're referring to because I have read it too.
Yes. I've read it multiple times.
Yeah. Yeah. Tumblr was like that cool, like, and it's still, I'm still on Tumblr in a low key way. It was like that cool kind of, I feel like it's the one place where that fan fiction and fan art community still exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But we can talk all day about the internet and how it's dying and being destroyed by mega corporations. But let's talk about our chapter since you brought up Dudley. That gives us a good segue because this chapter takes place almost entirely at Privet Drive. So the first thing we do to get into our chapter is a chapter summary. Now, we offer to our guests, if they would like to try to do the chapter summary, you are absolutely welcome to. If not, I'm happy to do it.
How long does the chapter summary have to be?
So that is a great question. We try to keep it to 30 seconds. We start a timer and cut ourselves off after 30 seconds.
Okay, I think I have a very brief summary, about 10 seconds.
Go for it.
I'm taking this challenge.
Do it.
Go for it. Yep.
Whenever you're ready.
Okay. Harry loses control. And there are minor consequences. I can't say major, but there are minor consequences. And yeah.
That is a great, like,
that it's perfect
macro level summary. we like dig in. We're like, how fast can I read this paragraph we wrote? But you did it in 10 seconds or less. So that's great.
And honestly, if you just ended it as Harry loses control, I'm like, hey, that works perfectly too.
It works perfectly for this chapter and like probably like 20 other chapters as the series goes on.
Well, glad I could be of service.
Yeah, great job. To give a little more context just for our readers, this is Aunt Marge's big mistake. And y'all kind of know what happens, but we're going to dig into it.
It was a big mistake.
Oh, she made one. Yeah.
I do like that this is pitched as she messed up. And like in a lot of ways, she messed up. But it's set up as
also
like...
Also, Harry messed up.
Yeah, the mistake was on Harry's part. Marge just really pushed him to it.
I think that Rowling just really wanted to get the big in the chapter title there. I've got some stuff about how Aunt Marge is portrayed, but...
All of the Dursleys, I mean, except for Petunia.
The fat shaming in this chapter is unreal.
Oh, it's so extreme.
Yeah.
My first note says that Rowling writes that Dudley spends most of the summer with his piggy little eyes fixed on the television screen and his five chins wobbling as he ate continuously. This is like the first paragraph.
It is.
Yeah.
Like we've talked about this before, how like it feels like fat shame in here. And I know
this is definitely fat shaming.
Yeah, 100%.
I feel pretty secure in saying that. I know that it's supposed to be like the Dursleys are gluttonous and lazy and they have everything in the world and just refuse to give it to Harry and like malnourish him. And I get that contrast that's supposed to be set up, but it truly feels like she's setting you up to be like, don't you hate them? Look at these fat little
don't
piggies.
Don't you hate? Yeah. Yeah. And like younger me was like, yeah, I sure hate them. Now that I'm older, I was like, ooh, yeah. Rolling. That's problematic. I don't like that.
I could have hated
a skinny or even just like normal sized family. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah. They can be horrible people and not be 4,000 pounds. And like being 4,000 pounds, it doesn't make them a horrible person. Like that's not
right.
One of the qualities of like why Vernon Dursley sucks. It's not, well, he's a big old fatty. Yeah. that's not okay.
And same with like Petunia, because she's like the only skinny one in the family, but like she's still described as having like a horsey face.
Yeah. She's like this like crow like figure that's always like looming around and is like a shrew. It's like there's two polar extremes here. And
yeah.
And both of them are just like ugly as bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And that plays into it too. It's really gross.
Yeah.
And that
we could talk all day about how problematic J.K. Rowling is. But
oh, yeah.
I didn't come here for that. I didn't come in here to bash on the series.
There are people that are like J.K. Rowling's current views. She's a monster. But the Harry Potter series is fine. I'm like, I love the Harry Potter series, but there is stuff in there that is clearly reflective of J.K. Rowling having very problematic views. And this chapter really just put it on the front burner here.
Yeah, I agree.
We start out on that bad note. The Dursleys are watching television, and there's a news report about an escaped prisoner, which in a book called Prisoner of Azkaban should probably pay attention to.
But you're getting this on their Muggle television, which was interesting, of like, just keep an eye out for Black. He's armed and extremely dangerous. They don't give any more information than that.
Yeah. And Vernon's like, they should have let us know where he escaped from.
He could be on the block.
Well, that's true.
I mean, I think that's valid.
I agree. Yeah.
I want to know if somebody escaped
the
from a prison in Kansas
good thing
or
Vernon
one.
Dursley says.
Yeah.
Vernon also comes out big time in favor of the death penalty in this chapter, where he says hanging is the only way to deal with these people.
And for a character who at this point has only been described as black with a lot of hair.
Yeah. Like they didn't even talk about what he did wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. What? That sounds like there are racial undertones, but you know that I'm not going to jump to conclusions like that.
Yeah, like his name is Black, but still.
Yeah. I did look it up. Apparently the death penalty was suspended in England and Wales in 1965 before it was permanently outlawed in 1969. So Vernon's been carrying this torch for 20, 30 years at that point of just like, we should be killing.
At which point it's also reasonable to say like he was alive when it was a thing.
Yeah, I'm sure he was. He was probably born in like the 50s, but just like, whew.
Yeah.
The world has moved on, Vernon.
Come on, Vernon, get with the times.
At least England has. The U.S., not so much. We won't take it to that, though. And then this whole concept of Aunt Marge enters the picture. Harry learns that Aunt Marge will be coming to stay with them for a week. Marge is Vernon's sister. And he sees this as an opportunity to finesse a little negotiation here.
Oh.
To kind of blackmail Vernon into like, you know, it's going to be real hard to keep my mouth shut about Hogwarts and about magic and about who I am and not call her horrible. Yeah. It'd be a lot easier to do that if my little persuasion
slip.
And not
poison her dogs.
Oh, we'll talk about the dogs. And I think this is so clever of Harry. Like, he plays this real well. Because Vernon...
But yet...
Yeah, I mean, up until the last couple pages of the chapter.
Yeah.
But, like, Vernon's like, if you say anything, I'll just kick the stuffing out of you. And Harry's like, you can beat me all you want. She's not going to forget what I say.
It's too bad he didn't use this cunning, clever, like little tactic to literally pick up a letter off of the floor in the first movie and book. He just kind of jumps and tries to catch one, but it's like, dude, there are like
everywhere
a million letters on the floor that you could just pick up and run to your room real quick.
Harry's not smart often. I got to give him props, though, in this chapter. Like, he pulled one over here, I think. I mean, again, up until the last couple pages. But, like, it was a good idea.
It was a solid idea. He didn't give himself any collateral, though. Like, if everything worked out and Marge went home, Vernon still could have been like, never mind.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Oh, I didn't think of that either.
Yeah, he should have done the like, you sign half of it now.
What does that even mean?
Do it like freelance style.
You get just Vernon. Dursley doesn't approve yet.
Okay, the other thing about this permission slip thing, couldn't he have just forged the signature?
Like magic.
Low key.
That's what I was thinking too.
I don't know.
He didn't think about that.
I was a crappy 12-year-old once. I forged signatures. I had express permission from my mother to forge signatures.
My handwriting...
Oh, that's the difference between you and me.
My handwriting was and still is terrible. I never would have gotten away with it.
I practiced.
Oh, man. I think one time, some kid that I knew that I wrote in the neighborhood, he got a write-up from our bus driver. And, of course, having a write-up, you have to go home and have your parents sign, like, oh, yeah, I know my kid got in trouble. But, like, he didn't want his parents to find out. So I just was like, what's your aunt's name? And I just forged it from, and I feel like a complete criminal, like, say, like admitting this. But I just remembered since the topic was on forgery.
I think the statute of limitations has run out on like bus driver forgeries. But like that was always my thing when I was 12. I was like, they're not going to know any better. Like, how would the bus driver know what your parents' signature looks like?
Yeah.
Like they're never going to clock you on it. They don't care. It's yeah.
Meanwhile, I had my own little panic attack while we did absentee ballots this year. And I had seen much stuff about like, oh, if your signature looks different from what they have on file, they might count it. I was like, my signature never looks the same ever. So I'm like, I don't even think I can forge my own signature.
You also sign stuff as Joe.
Yeah.
Just Joe.
Well, with my last name.
Okay.
But not you Joseph.
Yeah.
I was going to think, like, if you did just Joe, then someone could easily just, like, write mama afterwards and it would just be a big joke.
Oh, I wish you had signed your absentee.
Like joke.
Yes. So Harry pulls this deal off. He gets Vernon to agree. And then Aunt Marge enters the picture. And this is 90% of my notes for this chapter, because the fat shaming is out of this world with her. To give a little background on the character, because that is my job, according to Wizarding World, which is Pottermore, I hate calling it Wizarding World, her full name is Marjorie Eileen Dursley, and she is the oldest sister of Vernon's, which to me implies he has other sisters who have never been mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
Pottermore says that she is secretly in love with Colonel Fubster, who is who she left most of her dogs with, but he will never marry her due to her truly horrible personality. And this unreturned passion fuels her bad behavior.
Wait, who's Colonel Fubster?
Colonel Fubster is a guy in her like village that watches her dogs for her when she goes out of town.
And supposedly had her over for drinks where she shattered a glass in his face.
Yeah, but like...
Well, I wouldn't want to marry her after that either.
Like, valid. Yeah, she's a horrible person. I don't fault Colonel Fubster at all. But also, like, the idea that because she's not loved by this person, she's a bad person. That just doesn't feel like, I think she's just a bad person. I don't think it's that she's unlucky in love, so she's taking that out on Harry.
Yeah.
I think she's just a monster.
That would be a weird way to redirect things to, like, because from the point where she met Harry, like, he goes back to, like, oh, Dudley's fifth birthday, where she kicked him in the shins a bunch of times
that
so
was
he would
like
lose
seven
a game.
Years ago
with her walking stick.
And
then got him like dog biscuits
that I laughed at that, but I'm like, that's terrible. Like, when the Dursleys gave Harry old socks, I was like, that's awful. The dog biscuits is especially bad though. Let's see, JK
she loves her dogs though, that's a compliment.
On that note, J.K. Rowling says that she regrets making Aunt Marge a breeder of bulldogs because she now knows them to be a non-aggressive breed. She's selected them, I guess, because they were known as an aggressive dog and they look grumpy, which she said on appearance alone seemed to suit Aunt Marge. So Aunt Marge is a big old fatty who looks like a bulldog, according to J.K. Rowling, which, again, feels icky. Usually I would go into all kinds of etymology for Aunt Marge as well, as far as like, why is she named Marjorie Eileen Dursley? I truly think the only factor in J.K. Rowling selecting the name Marge for her was that it rhymes with large, because she's like, large, Marge.
And Marge. I'm a pun master.
Like, I do think that Rowling generally puts work into these names, but I don't think that she applied a second of critical thought to, I mean, really any of her views, but especially as far as they go with Aunt Marge.
And this chapter is very much looked back on as just like comedic relief, basically, throughout the story. So it makes sense that just like this is an inconsequential character.
Yeah, it's still gross. One good thing, though, Aunt Marge was played by Pam Ferris in the movies, who is, to me, best known for playing none other than the Trunch in Matilda.
I never put those together.
Oh, man.
I mean, it's a pretty similar character.
Seems pretty similar. I'm surprised she didn't bring her, what was it, like those discs? Like those really heavy...
swing around.
Yeah. She just brings them in like her purse with Brutus and, or not Brutus, what is her dog's name? Ripper.
Yeah, Ripper.
In this version of the flashbacks, that's what she uses to knock his shins out.
Well, he would not have any legs anymore.
Oh, he went down. All right.
Yeah, so
the boy who fell over.
So that's fun for me because I love Matilda so much. I guess Pam Ferris has just like carved out a category for herself of playing like large, scary women that are defeated by magic. So that's one thing, I guess. Let's see. According to an article in the Daily Telegraph from July of 2000, J.K. Rowling said that she based Aunt Marge on her maternal grandmother, Frida, who preferred her dogs to human relatives. I feel bad for Grandma Frida.
Poor Frida.
Yeah. And then the other thing that really got at me is Marge is described in this chapter as having a mustache, although it's noted that it's not as bushy as Vernon's. This feels gross, especially given J.K. Rowling being a horrific transphobe. First of all, nothing wrong with a lady living having a little fuzz up there as a woman that, you know,
me too.
A little bit gross up there. Nothing wrong with that.
It's natural.
It is natural. And it just feels like a way of policing the way people look and the way people present and just saying, like, you should hate Aunt Marge because she's ugly.
And she's fat and she likes dogs more than people. Well, a lot of people like dogs more than people. That's kind of like the appeal of dogs.
It just, this, the whole thing just felt gross to me. And I don't think it ever truly set in for me how disgusting this all was until I read these books as an adult and with the harsh light of J.K. Rowling in 2020.
Oh, yeah. And problematic, but... it'd be like that sometimes.
Yeah. So I want to make sure we did our due diligence here of just saying, this is bad.
I would like to go back a little bit in the chapter to when Harry does make that deal with Vernon and the how much he's willing to put into it of like, he makes sure to hide everything. Like, he gets rid of his one support companion. He sends Hedwig over to
Ron's house
for the week.
Yeah, he hides all his stuff in, like, the floorboard and in the pillowcase. So, like, he's holding up his end of the deal.
Yeah, as much as possible. And, like, there's no way Marge was going to go into his room. But it was like, just in case, I can't risk it for the chance to go to Hogsmeade. He really wants this. And he does everything he can to keep himself under control. He's memorizing, like, his broom care manual.
Pretend school. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk about St. Brutus's in a second. You guys did bring up how Marge would apparently beat Harry with her walking stick. She did this to stop him beating Dudley at musical statues. I did Google, and musical statues is what we call freeze dance here in the U.S.
I've never heard of the game freeze dance, but it just sounds like...
You've never heard of freeze dance? You're a second grade teacher. What are you doing with your time? What do you learn in the classroom?
If it's not
actual school things, and also I haven't had kids in my classroom outside of this pandemic.
But...
in second
freeze
grade.
Dance.
Oh, right.
Like, you turn on the music and everybody, you know, wiggles. And then when...
Yeah, you
stop the music, everybody has to freeze.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I figured out what that was.
Yeah, you know what freeze dance. I'm 100% certain that you have played freeze dance in your life.
Probably.
Yeah.
It would be a good thing to do over the virtual learning, like a good little activity thinking about it.
Yeah.
That's true.
Give freeze dance a shot. I liked the idea of Harry playing freeze dance. Something about that really tickled me and being really good at it.
He had a good childhood memory of being included to play freeze dance.
And apparently he was too good at it.
And then a woman beat him with a cane.
Instead, just have him be beat by the... I forgot the word for it already. The disc, the flying disc.
I forgot it too. Shot put. Isn't
the
that...
Shot put,
no, the flying disc.
Throw it at
discus? I don't know. What does the trunch do? What is her thing that she swings around? I feel like she is like a shot put master. That's her thing. But shot put, you throw. It's like a ball. It's not attached to a rope.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. I think it is a shot put because I remember that was like... her whole like character.
Yeah, she can throw things. Like right. When she throws that girl across the field.
By her like pigtails.
Oh, that is like top 10 scariest thing in children's movies ever, when the girl gets swung around by her pigtails. Oh boy.
Welcome to Watch Mojo. Top 10 scariest scenes in children's movies.
Yeah, we should do a Matilda podcast.
I like that. That doesn't touch on when she puts someone in a...
Oh, in the pokey? The pokey is...
An Iron Maiden?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. The pokey was a lot.
What a fun name for an Iron Maiden, though.
Yeah, a pokey.
Pokey.
Yeah.
Pokey. Yeah, maybe the trunch is worse than Aunt March.
I'm going to say yes.
Both are down with child abuse, so like, it's just on a larger scale with the trunch.
She has more access to children.
That's true.
Marge loves Dudley, though.
She does love Dudley. She dotes on Dudley.
Duddy kittens.
Neffy poo, I think is what she calls it.
She's got quite a few nicknames for Dudley.
Neffy poo. I like that.
Vernon told Marge that Harry attends St. Brutus's Secure Center for Incurably Criminal Boys. I did check. This is not a real place. I do wonder if it is a real place in universe, like if this is a school in their town or something.
Definitely not in town. I'm sure that Vernon found some.
Oh, the HOA wouldn't be down with that.
Oh, yeah.
Vernon definitely found some place that was real, but far away.
OK. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so, because I think Marge would like know about schools where you can beat children. Like, I feel like that would be on her radar. Mm-hmm. The name, though, St. Brutus's, what is it? Secure Center for Incurably Criminal Boys. The Incurably Criminal Boys feels very like series of unfortunate events to me.
Mm-hmm.
Just in the phrasing of that.
Yeah, of like, we've given up on them.
Thinking about it, if it is a real place in the universe, how many of those incurably criminal boys do you think are actually just like wizards that don't know how to channel their energy and channel their magic, and their parents like are muggles and they don't know like about the wizarding world, so they just kind of ship them off before they get their letter.
That's,
you know?
Oh, like it's filled with a bunch of 8 and 9 year olds.
Yeah. Oof. Or it's just filled with kids that need like help and not to be beaten.
Oh yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. It's probably named for Brutus, St. Brutus's Secure Center, Brutus, the Roman who stabbed Caesar. I don't know why she would pick that, but that's.
I figured St. Brutus would be. Is there an actual St. Brutus?
I don't think so. Not that I know of. I don't think anybody canonized the guy that stabbed his best friend.
I figured maybe like she used the
there is
name
no
Brutus because
yep.
Brutal.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even think of that. Is that where we get our word brutal? I really should have dug more into the etymology on this one. So that I found funny, the title of it. Let's see. What was my other note? Oh, OK. So about the dogs. So Marge is like a bulldog breeder, which I'm not sure how that's a career, but it's.
You can sell like well-bred dogs for a lot of money. That's... Oh,
yeah. It's kind of a mixed. There's a mixed opinion about the moral, I guess.
Yeah, there's
the morality of being a breeder, you know.
Okay.
there's a lot of inbreeding that can happen, especially when you're looking for that purebred dog. Mm-hmm. There's some bad stuff involved in it. You can do it in positive ways, but it's better get your dog from a shelter.
She's talking about drowning the scrawny dog, so I don't think this is like
she didn't
nice
drown
place.
It.
She got Colonel Fubster to do it for her.
No wonder she's in love with him.
He drowns those dogs for her.
She's like, yeah, I like that.
And I feel like that's enough to counteract the idea of him thinking she's too cruel.
Yeah, that she couldn't do it herself. Huh, interesting. So, Angel, let me ask you this. Do you like dogs?
I do. I really do like dogs.
Okay.
I do, too.
I'm very afraid of dogs. I've had a lot of bad experiences with dogs in my life. As two people who like dogs and presumably like would have no problem, say, touching a dog like I do, would you let a dog drink out of your cup?
No.
Oh, no.
Okay, good. I wanted to make sure I was not out of my mind in saying that this is absolutely disgusting that Marge lets her dog drink out of her teacup.
Oh, yeah, gross.
It's horrifying to think about. It's like there are people that are like really into their dogs and like let their dogs lick their face and mouth. And
I don't like that.
I'm not about
inside
that.
Inside of their mouth.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's bad. Saucer is equally bad.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm. If they had like a little separate plate, then like, yeah, that's fine.
Well, that's the thing. Petunia offers a second cup for the dog. And she's like, nah, he'll just drink out of mine.
Ooh.
I do also like the image of Marge coming in with her dog under her arm. Like with like she's got a suitcases in one arm, dog under the other.
Yeah, I was truly disgusted by this.
Yeah, I have our household. My roommate has a little dog named Snoopy. He's a little old man, and he's a Chihuahua terrier mix. And it's very amusing to see like my very tall roommate just having this little dog like tucked under his arm. Mm-hmm. So just imagining a big lady with like a full grown bulldog just under her arm in a suitcase is just very comedic.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Let's see. Harry lasts a lot less time with Marge in the movie, though. I will say he made it through almost the whole week in the book, whereas the movie, it seems like he lasted like an hour or two.
Well, she gets drunk a lot quicker
she
in the
does.
Movie, it
that's
seems
true.
Like.
That's true. Yeah, so that's how this kind of plays out. They spend this week together. Harry is not having a fun time, but he's kind of keeping his mouth shut. Whenever he gets mad, he thinks about his broom care manual.
Aww.
It is very cute, and it's like... Honestly, that's a pretty good anger management technique. But so the last night that Marge is there, she is getting sloshed. She's had some wine. She's having some brandy. And she's running her mouth a bit. And she goes onto the topic of Harry's parents. And this is where Harry starts to get at it. She refers to James as a wastrel, which is what it sounds like. Somebody who, you know, doesn't do anything, just sits around, good for nothing. And Harry loses it specifically when Marge says that James was unemployed, a no account, good for nothing, lazy scrounger. And like, listen, I get it. I get that Harry is upset that like somebody is stamping all over his dead parents' memory. But James was unemployed. He was living off his parents' money. Yeah, I mean, he was like a freedom fighter, I guess, and he was in hiding.
Oh, okay.
But he did not have a job, as far as we know.
Yeah.
He was also 22, I think.
21, yeah. I don't know. I had a job when I was 21.
Yes, but like he wasn't just wasting around. He was doing stuff we can't get into right now.
Yeah.
That just begs the kind of like the thought-provoking like, idea, like in the wizarding world, it really doesn't seem, it seems like they're like the job opportunities are kind of like, I don't know much about like the really deep gritty like details, but I know that like when these characters grow up, they go on to pursue like careers, like straight up, like there, it didn't seem that there were like any like part-time like,
yeah,
or full-time jobs that didn't require like a degree, like a reception or a waitress or a waiter or a cook or anything like that. There didn't really seem to expand much on that.
Totally. It doesn't seem like there are like blue collar workers in the Harry Potter right. universe. And like we do see as we get to like Hogsmeade and even in Diagon Alley, there are people who work in shops. But 99% of the time, it seems like it's the shop owner. Like Ollivander owns Ollivander's and he also works in Ollivander's. There's no like, oh, yeah, I'm going to get a job on the weekends and, you know, like run a cash register. There's none of that.
And there's no Hogwarts students that are like, oh, I work here on the weekends.
Yeah. And like, I get that that's hard because like, you know, you're going to a boarding school. You might not have transportation that's regular to have that job. But like the Weasleys could use their kids to get a part time job.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
That doesn't seem to be an option.
Even Hogsmeade would be a good place for like, since it's so close to the school.
Yeah.
Hogsmeade would be a great place for students to go get jobs.
But they don't.
That doesn't seem to exist. Yeah, there's just like nothing there for them.
Yeah. And so it's like this weird thing of like, OK, they graduate Hogwarts. They're 17. And then there doesn't seem to be like a college or university or anything that they go on to. It seems like either they go to Hogwarts to teach or they work at the ministry or open a business. Like those seem like the three job paths.
My only thought is like, are there other wizarding schools? Because it seems like this is the prestigious. Well, yes. But like, are there other ones in this area? Because this is like the prestigious one.
It seems like if you live in England and you're magical, your kids go to Hogwarts. And it's Scotland and Ireland and Wales, I guess. I don't know if there are any Welsh students specifically named. But
because I feel like there's only like three career paths that are pitched to Harry right later in the books.
Yeah. So, like, I understand James being unemployed. He was concerned with other things, to say the least. But, like, he was kind of living off of the family money there. So, Harry just, like, getting pissed at this specifically kind of seemed weird to me. Because Marge had previously talked about some stuff with Petunia of, like, oh, Petunia, it's nothing against you. It's just, like, you know, your sister was a bad egg. And Harry kind of takes that. But when James is attacked for being like a no good layabout, that's when Harry loses it. That just seemed odd to me.
Yeah, I think that, you know how when you're a kid, your parents are like all that you kind of like you respect and know you learn a lot of like moral.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also since he had already been at Hogwarts for a little bit and everyone, or at least a lot of people told him, you look a lot like James. And, you know, James was wonderful. Lily was wonderful. And I really think he took it to heart because he sees himself in James being his son and looking a lot like him. So maybe he also, since his parents are dead, he took it extra hard because he was like, this lady is attacking me.
Yeah.
In a sort of way, not really thinking about the logic behind it, because when you're a kid, you don't really attach any logical, like, oh, I shouldn't really be upset over this. If you get upset over something, you get upset over something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's exactly what's going on here. And just to be clear, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being unemployed. People are unemployed for a whole lot of reasons, and it's very complicated.
But I would almost put it in the other direction, because he takes her insulting him all week long.
Yeah.
And it's only when she's really drunk and really going at his parents.
Yeah.
It's weird that it's only when James is put down, but I feel like he was ready to break as she's talking about his mom.
And that's maybe true. Was just like it was like the leading last up straw. To it. Yeah. But I think that what Angel said is really insightful, because I think that in this book and in this series, there's a pattern of Harry jumping to defend James specifically without really knowing better. Harry has, unfortunately, because he's grown up without his parents largely, kind of had to construct this view of who his parents are just based on what other people have told him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has this image in his head of who his parents are from what people have told him, and also just from being a kid who is missing them. And so he loves them and he holds them in very high regard, but he really didn't know anything about them. Like, Harry doesn't know if James was employed or not. He doesn't know if James was a layabout or not. but he's adamant in defending them. And I think that's going to be a recurring thing that we're going to have to deal with as the series goes on, of like Harry constructing that image of James and then having to deconstruct it as he learns more about him.
Yeah, because he is definitely taught some things.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. And as a kid, you already, even when you don't lose your parents, you have like a glorified view of them on like a pedestal. But as you get older, you start seeing them for like who they really are as a person, as a human, and their quirks and habits. And since he never really gets to experience getting to know his parents on that personal human to human level, he always holds this sort of glorified on a pedestal view of them until, you know, he gets older and he kind of has to deal with other things and let that not be the forefront of his mental, I guess, headspace, you know, because yeah. I noticed that they focus a lot more on Harry dealing with my parents are dead, like for a lot of his, and like it spends a lot of his energy, and as opposed to the later books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially yeah. because up till now, the people that have actually known his parents have said like, oh, I knew and loved your parents.
Yeah.
Your parents were amazing.
Yeah. So I think that this is kind of our first hint of something that's going to come up a lot in this book and in future books, of Harry having to be confronted with this idea that his parents maybe weren't the people he thought he was. He thought that they were. And I think that that's just a matter of like him being confronted with other opinions that, like Joe said, so far, everybody that he's met have been like, oh, yeah, your parents, they were great people. And so I think that it's going to be interesting to see how Harry reacts when he's confronted with something that says the contrary to that. And I think you brought up a good point, too, Angel, about like the early books. So much about, especially when we read the first book, when we did our coverage of that, I was struck by how central that was to the first book, that loss that Harry feels. Because I think that in a way, like he's grown up at Privet Drive and just kind of accepted, like, my parents are dead and this is the situation that I'm in.
Right. They died in a car crash.
Yeah. And he kind of just gets to forget about them in a way because the Dursleys never want to talk about them. And they never want to say like, oh, you know, your parents were great people, because they don't believe that. But when he gets to Hogwarts and all of these people are telling him like, your parents are great people, it's awesome to see like that you look like them, because it's like seeing my old friends again, and him kind of seeing all these things that they've left behind, like these pieces of them, like the invisibility cloak and the pictures. I think in a way in that first book was almost re-traumatized to that loss. And so it's like an open wound for him at this point, that he's still feeling that loss very intensely in this book. And so having anybody say anything negative about them, he is going to set off. And that is what happens. So
it's like he has to experience grief fully. Yeah. And finding out your parents were murdered when you spent your entire life thinking that they just died in an unavoidable car crash, and finding out that your parents were murdered by someone very awful, that's going to hurt. Like, that's going to suck. And it feels disrespectful. Like, I imagine that when hearing anyone talking ill of his dead parents is going to feel incredibly disrespectful, because they were murdered in a very terrible, terrible way, and they kind of don't deserve that.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And so I think that it's going to be a challenge to Harry throughout this book, especially because this book deals very much with his parents' legacy. I won't say too much more than that to avoid spoilers, but dealing with that image he has of his parents and constructing that and deconstructing it. So Harry loses it, suffice to say, does a little unintentional magic. Aunt Marge blows up like a balloon and flies away, which, okay.
And it was quite an image. I will say, to harp back on the movie, that is a great scene.
Like, it is a good scene. Like, it's so fun. Well. It's whimsical. It's just like the idea that, like, oh, yeah, this fat woman gets even fatter and flies away is a little like, okay, JK.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
It would be like, I feel like if she was skinny, then, you know, I think it would be kind of funnier. But, you know,
yeah.
You know.
I kind of saw it as like, oh, she's full of hot air. She's just spouting all these things.
That's clever.
I didn't think of it that way. I feel better about it that way. And so Vernon is like, you change her back. You fix this. And Harry's like, no, nope. I've lost it. He's like, don't you come near me. I got my wand out. And he leaves.
I'll blow you up too.
30 seconds earlier, he was like, I cannot use magic. I cannot use magic.
The ministry's going to come for me. And then
he not only does he blow her up, he like non-verbally opens up every door he comes across. And like, here's all my stuff now. I'm just out of here.
Yeah. And he leaves Privet Drive. And that is where the chapter ends. So Angel and Joe, any stray thoughts, anything left over from the chapter that we didn't get to talk about?
What I like is that when Marge starts when she gets sloppy drunk. Yes, we're going to revisit that moment. When she gets sloppy drunk and starts talking about Harry's parents, I like how Vernon could sense that Harry was like, going to lose it, because he's like, more wine, more brandy, drink some more.
But more brandy, just go upstairs, ultimately.
I don't know why
just
he thought...
Go.
I don't know why he thought the solution was to give her more alcohol, though.
It seems like the way a lot of people deal with family of just like, well, if we're drunk, it's more tolerable.
mm-hmm.
But also, on that note, he says, okay, go upstairs. And Petunia is saying, no. Harry's gonna stay. Go on. We're proud of your family. And it made me think of throughout the time she's here, throughout this whole week, Harry's like, usually with the Vernon, with the Dursleys, I get to hide. They don't want to see me at all. But Marge really likes having me there to just constantly mock me.
Do you think that Petunia felt any type of way about what Marge was saying? Because I got the impression from this chapter that Petunia also acknowledges that Marge stinks, because you see Dudley gets bribed basically to like hug Marge and like spend time with her. And I feel like that can only happen if the parents acknowledge
by Marge
she's a difficult person. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, he's getting bribed by Marge. Okay.
Marge gives him the money.
Okay. I thought it would have been a little out of character for Petunia to be upset with what Marge was saying about James, especially.
Well, of course.
But even Lily.
Like, that's your family. Like,
yeah.
No matter if I had a sister that I just did not like, and my in-laws and like my sister-in-law who didn't know them at all is just echoing back what my husband, her brother, was telling her, no matter how much I hate my sister and her husband, it would still rub me a little bit the wrong way, because that's still my blood. That's still my family. Even if the person's like, oh, no, no offense to you or your family, but I don't like your family. Like, I still wouldn't like it.
Yeah, I wanted to know what Petunia's reaction would have been in this chapter. But unfortunately, she's not really present much in the chapter.
The most we really get is like she hates animals and cringes at the sight of
runner beans?
Ripper. Runner beans.
There's a scene where Petunia like stares out the window at the neighbor's runner beans, and I'm like, what are runner beans?
What are runner beans?
They're like string beans. Apparently the neighbor is growing string beans and Petunia is not happy about it.
She was just focusing on those beans so she doesn't like give any reaction about what Marge is saying.
She just looks at the beans. So that's her strategy. Harry thinks about his broom manual and Petunia thinks about the beans.
The beans and the broom manual.
I want Petunia to be more of a character than she is, because I think that Petunia could be really interesting, but she really doesn't get anything interesting until like book 5 a little bit and book 7.
I really think the most character... not even a character arc, but like the most insight that we get about her character is the little bit in book 1 where she explains what happened and the flashback later on. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
And I really don't like that.
Yeah. I kind of wanted a little something in here, a little hint that like Petunia cares in some way about Lily, even if it's a complicated caring, even if it's like a very troubled relationship. I have to imagine she still doesn't want to see Marge like take a poop all over her sister, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Even if it's like interrupting Marge by like trying to distract her or something,
yeah.
Or and then mentioning like a certain look in her eye. There's none of that.
Yeah. Petunia's just so passive. And
right.
I want a little more from her.
Yeah. But I feel like that's kind of the case with the Dursleys in general of like, you know, they really don't get characterization.
Yeah.
For a while other than like greedy.
Yeah.
Fat.
Skinny for Petunia.
Poor space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is why I like book five with the inevitable, like what happens with Dudley. I like that a lot.
Yes.
That was one of the most touching moments for me. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful.
Yeah. So we'll get to that in 600 years when we cover book five. But for now, Petunia remains pretty flat. Any other stray thoughts? Anything else we missed or skipped over? Anything?
I like how in the movies, the chair like explodes off of her butt. I thought that was so funny.
Yes, as a grown man who sat in a lot of children's chairs, my butt does get stuck. And if I were to expand while sitting in a chair a little too small for me, oh, it would pop.
It is a fun scene in the movie. If I think about it from the hot air thing, it sits better.
Me too.
Joe, any stray thoughts?
No, I think we got it.
All right. So with our chapter discussion done, that means that it is time for Spell of the Week.
And our Spell of the Week, our spell this week is Inflatus.
Oh, I wonder what that does.
You know, it's a little complicated.
Okay, hang on. I'll put on my thinking cap and...
pronounced Inflatus.
Oh.
Derives from the word inflate. It's actually... it originally officially shows up in the Harry Potter video game.
Which
for
one?
The Goblet of Fire.
Which one?
Ooh.
It does not say.
Okay.
You are...
I'm going to continue to be upset about that.
So, Angel, in case you're curious, all the Harry Potter video games like that came out on different consoles were different.
Very different. If you played it on like the PS2 versus like the Game Boy, very different experiences.
I tried to play it on my roommate's old Game Boy, I believe. I played the Lego one. I played the fifth one. And I was just kind of like, I think I'm stuck here. And I was like the very, very beginning. And I was like, I'm stuck here.
Lego Harry Potter is fun. Yeah, those came for the 3D. No, they were for the OG DS. Yeah, Lego Harry Potter. Yeah, those games are good. I very highly recommend some of the Harry Potter video games.
Have you played the Wii games? Because those ones were the ones where I was like,
no.
I'm interested.
I never really had a Wii, but I do have a Wii U now. So maybe that'll happen.
I played the Wii only, like, as a kid. That was, like, my console. I played the Wii, and... it makes my boyfriend so mad because every time we play the Wii together, I beat him because that was my console, and he always beats me or does better than me in like Xbox. So it's fair.
Yeah, it balances out.
I had the PlayStation 2 and then the Wii and the Xbox 360 for a little while. But the Wii, I definitely played the most, despite the fact that my family was mostly against video games, which meant I had 6 games total. But I played a whole lot of Wii Sports.
You guys are younger
Wii Sports
than me. So, like, I feel like y'all were the age group where, like, the Wii came out when you were, like, a kid. And I was a kid, but I was like a little bit old and my siblings were older than me.
You're
so
too
like,
cool for the Wii.
I was 11. I was like, I don't need that Mario. Give me that Crash Bandicoot. It's not like I was playing anything cooler, trust me. But like the Wii was like, if you were the age for the Wii, you played that Wii.
Oh, and I definitely did.
The Wii is like considered like the little geeky geeky console because it's like a stick and you have to wave it around And even though it's like, it didn't have like, oh yeah, hardcore, shoot, blow up stuff. Even though I've been playing The Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess for literally over 10 years at this point, and I just got back into it, and I'm trying to beat it like by the end of the year because it's been 10 years. I need to stop milking this game.
Oh, that was me with Final Fantasy X. Yeah, no, I was too busy playing Need for Speed Underground 2 and Fable when the Wii was a thing. But back to Inflatus.
Oh, okay, so Inflatus.
Keep blowing my mind. Do you like that? I thought of that a few minutes ago.
Oh boy.
And I just stuck it in my hat.
Cassie, double check this for me, because for etymology, it says the prefix inflate derives from the English word, which means to expand with oxygen. And I feel like oxygen is not the necessity for it to be inflated.
I Googled define. I'm sorry, wait. I binged define no. Inflate.
Well, find a different way to search.
According
for that.
To Bing, inflate is fill a balloon, tire, or other expandable structure with air or gas so that it becomes distended.
Yeah, there's I didn't no think oxygen, oxygen was necessary.
Yeah,
it was
You're
very
reading
weird
off
for that
the Harry
to be...
Potter wiki, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
You know my problems with the Harry Potter wiki.
Well, it's got all the facts. Just with
some
my,
of them are
mild
questionable and without citation.
Mild inaccuracies. But so it's only theorized that this is probably what was used, but it's only showed up this was probably what was used in this scene, but it only shows up in officially the Goblet of Fire video game and then in Lego Harry Potter years 1 through 4.
Oh, interesting. I honestly thought like if there were to be a spell, I thought it would be Engorgio.
Yeah,
but
I think
Inflatus is more accurate.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think the air part of it is what makes it different. Maybe Inflatus was like derived from Engorgio. Somebody was like, what if we do it with air? Let's make a version for that.
Now, if you were to use Engorgio, would something like float?
I don't think so. I think it would just get bigger.
I think it would just get bigger, yeah.
Because she is definitely...
She's floating.
Vernon tries to grab her and is lifted off the ground
a little bit,
which we totally blew past the part where her dog bites into Vernon's leg and like really hard, like he's bleeding from this dog bite.
I mean, yeah, it's an aggressive dog. That's what we've been made to believe. So that
and
tracks.
The dog also floats.
Yes, in the movie scene, the dog, it's a good scene.
In the movie scene, Vernon also falls from like the second story. And this is after he fell from the second story in the Chamber of Secrets movie. So Vernon's back has got to be all kinds of messed up.
Or he's just really strong.
Beneath that fat, muscle.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Vernon has a six pack.
If we're going to harp on that scene some more.
On his back. Six pack.
But if we're going to hark on that scene some more, I remembered like he's holding on to her and he says, like, sorry, as he lets her go. Like, he chooses to let go of her and let her fly away.
Well, because he knows. He's like, I got to look out for myself.
Yeah, I got to look for number one here.
I'm number one. I'm the man.
So Inflatus, is that... Have you inflated us with knowledge?
With the entirety of that wiki page.
Okay. So that is
it is a jinx, if you care. And
I
the
don't.
Light is purple.
So that is our spell of the week. Angel, where can people find you on the internet, in the podcast world? Let us know.
All right. So my personal Instagram is acute.angel.jpg because I'm not an obtuse angel. I'm an acute angel.
Why JPEG? My podcast, not PNG or BMP or GIF or...
Because Instagram is for photos. And from what I remember, JPEG is a thing for photos. And I thought it was a little clever, little manic, you know?
Okay. All of the things I list are also photo file formats, but maybe that's getting too hard.
Well, you said nerd. You did say GIF for the record.
I said GIF.
Okay.
Because I know you get upset when I pronounce it.
Now, Angel, is that JPG or JPEG?
JPEG.
I will link it in the show notes as well.
And my podcast Instagram is Maul Podcast, M-A-U-L Podcast.
Yeah. And what do you guys talk about on your podcast for interested listeners?
So what we discuss every week is one of us brings forth an unsolved mystery. I'm the unsolved mysteries. And my co-host Alex is covers urban legends. So think for example, the other week I brought to the table the mystery of Granger Taylor. You can find out more by going to that episode. It's available on all podcast apps, more dominantly Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean. We swap weeks. So one week it'll be my co-host, Alex, and the other one is me. And we don't tell each other what we're doing our research on. So it's like we're learning alongside the listeners and reacting to them and just having an overall discussion.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. I'll have to check some of those out. I've fallen into some of those unresolved mysteries holes. Like the JonBenet Ramsey stuff. I've read a lot of stuff about her that I regret.
I think the old co-host, because I just recently took over, mm-hmm. I think the old co-host had actually covered that topic. So, and it was a very good episode. So I highly recommend.
Yeah. Yeah. So people can check it out. Absolutely. Check out Angel on the internet and on the Mysteries and Urban Legends podcast, the Mall podcast, which is such a good acronym. I wish we had a cool acronym. We're just PT. And I think if you Google PT, you're going to get results for the Silent Hill thing on the PlayStation.
Which is like a scary looking game. I've watched gameplay of it and I'm like, oh, I just can't watch it all the way through because it's so creepy.
I had nightmares after watching a stream of it.
I do wish I could play that, but it does seem impossible.
Oh, no, there's a way. Okay. I can make it work if you really want to. Okay, so that is where you can find Angel online. For us, if you want to send us an email, we didn't have any emails to talk about today. Sorry. we didn't have any emails to talk about today, but if you want to send us an email, you can send it to owlpost@podtrivicustotalis.com, O-W-L-P-O-S-T, @podtrivicustotalis.com. You can visit our website, podtrivicustotalis.com, where there's a button too that says email us. If you don't know how to send an email, you can do it there.
You will need an email address.
Yes. Although it doesn't check.
I like
if
that.
It's
that
a,
took thought.
Well, because it's like one of those like forms, like what's your name? What's your message? And there is a required field for email. You could probably write nonsense in there. I don't think it actually checks. I don't think I set it up to do that. But sometimes I email people back. So like, don't do that. but you can send us an email with your thoughts, your comments, your corrections. If we pronounce something wrong, go ahead and send us an email to owlpost@petrificustotalis.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podtrificus. That's kind of all I've been checking. I'm going to be real with y'all. Don't like Facebook and I try not to spend time on it. And we have not worked out how to set up an Instagram yet. I mean, we know how to set up an Instagram and we do have an Instagram account, but there's nothing on it. So you follow us on Twitter @podtrivicus. Our website has our episodes and subscribe buttons and information and detailed show notes with links to all of the sources that we reference and cite in the podcast. And of course, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, everywhere you find podcasts. And you can join us next week for Chapter 3,
The Night Bus.